You're listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back, everybody, to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR. Jim Donovan, alongside with Matt Wilhelm, Nathan's off this week. Doug Deacon's been in studio with us and is gracing us to stay a little bit longer as we continue to get ready for training camp, which the first open to the public practice is July 30th here in Berea. Now, 11 free public practices here in Berea. That's down a little bit, I think, from last year. But now remember, the Browns are going to Rochester, New York.
Yes.
Okay, and they're going to practice against the Bills. Matt, one of Doug Deacon's greatest broadcasting moments was at St. John Fisher College in Rochester, New York, when the Browns went up there for a weekend with Butch Davis, I believe, as the head coach, and they used to scrimmage against the Bills. And on the Saturday morning scrimmage, Doug was doing radio with Casey Coleman, I believe, at the time, and...
Well, you got to explain, though, that the guy that's the head of PR for the Buffalo Bills.
Also, Denny Lynch.
No, Scott Burchill.
Well, Denny Lynch, too, right? Yeah, but, Scott Burchill used to be here?
Yeah, he used to be here. Yeah. He was with the PR department here. He also went to Illinois, and we gave him a pretty rough time when he was here, just in fun.
So he paid it forward to Doug, as we would say, and when I showed up at the field that morning, there's Doug in his prime broadcast position on the top of a garbage dumpster. That was an amazing broadcast.
Oh, yeah.
The stench coming out of there after they had rid themselves of their breakfast plates, and you went on the air to describe a horrible scrimmage.
And it was like broadcasting from the front row to stand, so you couldn't
see
anything.
Yeah, there was no depth perception on it. I mean, it was unbelievable.
And it was in the corner of the end zone.
It was in the corner of the end zone, yeah. I mean, that was really something. Anyway, so 11 practices here in Berea. Down a little bit, not because the Browns don't want you here, but they're not going to be here a couple of times when they practice up there in Rochester. Now, I was saying to Matt yesterday, Doug, that teams kind of went away from that, practicing against other teams because there were injuries and there were fights. I remember the Browns did the thing with the Bills. They also did one with the Colts. And then when they were out in Lakeland, I remember the Giants came in one time.
Went to the Giants, too.
They went to the Giants. And now they're going back to it because it's not just the Browns going to go against the Bills, but I notice other NFL teams are starting to do it.
And I think a lot of it has to do with the new CBA, that new collective bargaining agreement that limits the amount of contact that you have.
Right.
So I think by scrimmaging against someone else, you want to relinquish some of those. Hopefully the fights don't happen, but you want to give back some of those walkthrough type practices in those settings, and you want to get really a lot of bang for your buck. So that day, you want to go as hard as you can, and you get a great litmus test of exactly where you're at. And I think this Cleveland Browns team against that Rex Ryan coach team, which is going to be very good on defense, which is going to be very skilled on the offensive side of the football, we're really going to gauge where we're at, and we'll come back to fine-tune that as we dive deeper into the preseason games.
Well, and I think the other thing in training camp, the last thing you want is a guy getting hurt by friendly fire by your own guys. If it happens, I think, in a scrimmage, it's a little more acceptable, though it's not really acceptable, but that's just the way the facts are. And I think, it's basically for the younger ballplayers. I doubt if you're going to see Joe Thomas doing a lot of one-on-ones against Mario Williams. You might see Cam Irving out there. You might see Batonio out there. But you probably won't see, a lot of Joe out there. And that's the way it goes. But then you take the Columbus scrimmage down there. Back in, I think, 72, the Browns used to play an exhibition game in Columbus against the Bengals. And I think the first year was 70 or 80,000. Then the second year was down to about 50 or 60. And then the third year was down to 30. Because, you know, Columbus is basically an Ohio State town. And, I mean, you're not going to change it.
I mean, what do they get at the spring game?
They had almost 100,000. Yeah. They had just a shade below 100,000.
Unbelievable.
To watch practice.
Yeah. And it's televised.
It was televised. And this year, because we had the luxury of having three quarterbacks, they had a little like a quarterback competition, too, for the fans to make it exciting.
Wait, so Cardale, like a little skills thing?
Little skills thing,
really?
Yeah, with the three guys, yes.
And that is August 7th. That's a Friday, 6 to 8 down at Ohio Stadium. 60,000 tickets have already been gobbled up, and they've put a limit on that. So that's going to be what goes on there. Other than the offensive line, Doug, what are you looking at as maybe a battle that goes on in camp for to make the team. I always am fascinated with the guy that kind of breaks out of the pack and makes the team. But I don't know if I've identified that guy yet. It won't take long, though.
There's not going to be many of those guys.
Yeah, well, it seems as though they're pretty good. You're right, across the board as far as position battles.
There's two guys that I'm real curious about because, you know, they've been built up a little bit by some of the coaches. And, you know, that's Vincent Painter and Glenn Winston.
Yeah.
We kept hearing about these guys in practice, you know, but they never really played in the game. You know, Painter, you know, he looks like a Greek god. I mean, the guy
is huge.
He
is,
yeah. And Winston, you know, is they say when he runs the scout team, you know, he runs pretty darn hard. So those are two guys, I think. But I guess if you're going to go by the day-by-day guys that you kind of have an idea is the outside pass rusher. You know, we know Kruger had a good year last year, but we had Jabal Sheer on the other side. And, you know, he drew quite a bit of attention. Now, Mingo has kind of been relegated to more of a coverage linebacker, so he's got to try to make that, you know, continue to try to make that next step. You know, Orchard, he's a rookie.
Yeah. Matt, what are they saying about Orchard?
Are
they very happy with what they've seen so far?
They are.
And of course, it's tag football.
It is.
Right now until they get here.
Early in the season, I believe he's a guy that will come in when they take Mingo out and when we're going to bring those dual pass rushers. He's going to be a pass rush specialist early in his career and evolve into a linebacker that can do both as the season goes on.
When it's all said and done, what from the both of you here, what will Mingo be? Other than a first-round draft choice out of LSU. If he's going to be a productive player in the NFL with the Cleveland Browns, what will he do best, or what can they create for him?
I think
because he's such a great guy.
To grade out as good as he consistently does as the pass, the dropper in this defense, but what I would love to see is 6 sacks a year. You know, for where he is to be as good as he is dropping and get 6 sacks out of the year, because we used him in some different packages to move him around where he's not just lining up. He was aligned in the middle. Some of the cross dog stuff that we do to confuse, he came on. We just need to see him get there and finish.
I think we need to see him use his hands better. His problem is in the pass rush, you know, tackles get their hands on him, and you know, when you weigh 240, 245.
Yeah, is that the weight thing? Is that the everyone's always been worried about him being able to hold weight?
Well, you know, you can get by if you don't let the tackle gets his hands on your body. And you know, if you can swat him off and then use your speed, which is his, you know, a big asset, it'll help. But you know, if a tackle gets his hands on him and he's weighing 320 and this guy's weighing 250, the 320 is going to win.
Yeah. Incidentally, a bell just went off. Doug, your blueberry muffins are ready.
Thank you very much.
Well, here's the other thing, guys, that I'm all about, and I said this to you guys on the show when they had these draft picks this year, that I want to see the first round picks on the field and playing. Now, I think they have a shot to have that happen this year. Now, last year, it would have been a push to think that Manziel was going to play, even if he was a Vienna choir boy.
Right.
Okay? I mean, the fact of the matter is, I mean, to put him in at quarterback at that point, it would have been a push. Gilbert, not so much. I mean, I thought Gilbert should have played.
Yes.
And it was there for him to play. But I want to see our guys, our draft picks. I mean, that was the beauty of Betonio. Yeah. They drafted him. They put him there at left guard, and you never heard a peep out of him or from anybody. I mean, nobody got near him. I mean, he was such a that's the way you do it. That's how you win in the draft.
And the other thing, and I always kind of harp on, is I'd also like to see the quarterbacks call their own plays in the preseason. I know
that's interesting.
There's a lot of times they do it so they get different personnel groups and they can evaluate. But I think, you know, the key, obviously, of this football team is the quarterback position. And you want to know how much of the offense they have really grasped. I mean, are they just calling what they hear, or do they understand what they're hearing? And I think there's a difference. And I think by having a quarterback maybe for a quarter call his own plays, you'd get a pretty good idea.
Now, Matt, you have 4 guys right now, okay, keeping Terrell Pryor at wide receiver.
Yes.
You have 4 guys. As Thad Lewis is here, Shaw's here,
Manziel,
and of course, McCowan. How do you divvy up that playing time?
To be very honest, Fatty Lou might be. He's
watch
be
yourself
guy.
Now. This is.
I know.
This was his fraternity father, right over here.
I think
he sponsored him.
Unfortunately, he's going to be outside looking in on a lot of reps at any point throughout training camp or any of the scrimmages. And the reason why is because we know what we have out of Connor Shaw, and we want to expound on his growth as a second-year player.
Okay.
Who will most likely have a role on the practice squad, run the scout team, extremely well, along with. You want the same thing out of Johnny Manziel. You want to see and get as much value out of him and growth as you can because of where you drafted him. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the guy that's going to run the ship, and that's Josh McCown. So he's going to take 70% of the reps, say 65%, and the other remainders are going to be split between Johnny and Connor Shaw in my eyes.
Okay.
Well, you got interchangeable parts with Connor Shaw and Thaddeus Lewis. You got basically the same guy.
Right.
Maybe one's got a little bit stronger arm than the other, but they're both guys that you don't have to give a lot of reps to. But they sit there and they learn the offense. So when you put them in, they know where the ball is supposed to go. And we saw it with Thaddeus in Pittsburgh, and we saw it with Connor in the last game.
I want to tell a story about Thaddeus Lewis. Okay?
No, I was just going to say that one point is, but the one key factor between Thaddy Lou and Connor Shaw is there's a higher threshold for Connor Shaw being a Cleveland Brown because of his practice squad eligibility.
Oh, okay.
So he'll be a Brown. He'll be in the Brown and Orange, you know, on the practice squad, or he'll be somewhere else on an active roster, whereas Thaddy Lou is literally most likely fighting Johnny Manziel for the backup position because he has no practice squad eligibility.
He went out and he played in the last game of the year against Pat Shurmur's last game as the head coach in Pittsburgh that year and really played very, very well.
Yep.
We're walking out of the tunnel to the bus to come back to Cleveland, and it's all over, and we pretty much know it's all over for that coaching staff too. And it was Gil Haskell, who was kind of a special offensive assistant, and he was a Mike Holmgren guy. And he came up to me and said, "Do you realize what you just watched today?" And I said, "No, not really. What?" And he said, "You watched the best executed quarterback game that we have had all season long."
Wow.
Okay, now that was that's the way Lewis played.
I believe it.
Now, he turned in some pretty good performances up in Buffalo, too, didn't he?
He got a couple wins, I think.
Yeah, he got a couple of wins. He's a very interesting guy. He's a smart guy, and he really takes advantage of his opportunity. Mm-hmm. And he did that in the preseason when he was here. When he would go in there, I remember one time he rallied them in Detroit, and they won up at Ford Field. And so you don't have to give him a lot.
Sure.
He goes right in, and he knows the drill. When they come out of the four preseason games, should they have much more of a read on what they're going to get or what they think they're going to get with Manziel?
Absolutely. I think.
And is that imperative that they come out of that with this?
That feeling? Most definitely, because I think that if it's a negative light coming out of this preseason, his future in Cleveland is extremely limited.
What do you think, Doug?
I would agree. I think, you give him the first year, all the lights and cameras, which he's used to. But, he went through a little bit of a transition in regards to becoming a quarterback rather than an athlete that played quarterback. Because I think a lot of times down at A&M, he got away with his athletic ability rather than his ability to beat you mentally. And, the good quarterbacks, the Peyton Mannings, the Aaron Rodgers, and the Bradys, whether the ball is inflated the right way or not, they know where the ball is supposed to go.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And how much work will McCown have to have? And that's another tricky thing when you're trying to find out about Manziel and you're going to give Connor Shaw his time. But the most important thing is the Jets on opening day.
It is.
And if McCown's your guy, you got to make sure he has enough. Doug, you remember when Jake Delhomme got no time in the preseason, went down to Tampa and was awful? Go ahead.
I think Josh McCown has to get the workload of the middle tier of the National Football League quarterback-wise is getting. And that's majority of the practice reps, every single rep with the ones, and then – what we would say is the first quarter of the first preseason game, the first half or quarter and a half of the second, and three quarters in the third, and none in the fourth.
Yeah.
Well, I think he's got to get the reps with the wide receivers because they've got to get the timing and chemistry. The offensive line, you're not going to put them behind a second offensive line if he's your starting quarterback, and we saw that last year. I think just getting that chemistry, and some confidence in one another. I mean, you want the offensive line to have confidence in the quarterback. You want the receivers to have confidence because if people don't believe in one another, you got a problem.
Yeah, Doug, great having you here.
Okay, always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure.
You don't write, I got to come see you.
I know. I could not go to the fireworks display over in Bay Village because of the horses.
The horses.
Yeah, because they would have been running over to Spooked. Bay Village in our area. Yeah, you know, they would have gotten out of. You know the old story, the horses out of the barn?
you were going to ride them up. I didn't know.
Well, I'll tell you what, I've been chasing them. Anyway, thanks, Doug. Okay. We'll take a break on Cleveland Browns Daily as we get set for training camp here in Berea in a couple of weeks. Jim Donovan along with Matt Wilhelm, and we're back after this timeout.